Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Get him, Santa!
What? Who's that?
Get him, Santa!
Get him, Santa. Okay. You don't sound yourself, Cyrus. Your voice seems a little muffled this morning.
It's early.
Did you get your Jelly of the Month Club certificate yet in lieu of proper compensation?
I sure did. I have it framed. I have it framed and on my desk and signed by Mr. Patrick Madrid.
That's true. Yeah, it gave me great pleasure to give you that gift, the gift that keeps on giving. It's every time I walk into your office, I like seeing it there.
Everyone likes saying, Cyrus, that's the gift that keeps on giving.
Where have I heard that before?
I don't know.
Hey, phone number, 888-914-9149. Feel free to call in. This is a full-service show. Cage-free. 100% organic. What am I missing? Free range. That's right. You can ask a question on any topic, just about any topic. I mean, the Nixon years would be kind of boring, and I don't know all that much about pro sports, so maybe you want to avoid that. But pretty much anything else is wide open. 888-914-9149. First thing I want to do is give a shout out to all of our friends and listeners in Humboldt County, California, and the area in the Northern California area. They had a 6.2 earthquake early this morning, and 6.4, pardon me, 2:34 in the morning. Cyrus, having myself lived a great deal of my, well, actually almost way more than half of my adult life in California, and a California native, we went through any number of earthquakes, the Northridge quake, the Whittier Narrows quake, and a few other ones, and it's weird because they always seem to happen at night, or at least like early in the morning. It's still dark out. I don't know why that happens. And maybe if I looked at the statistics, it might show that my perception is incorrect. But that's my perception. They always seem to happen at night when you're in bed asleep and suddenly everything starts rattling. Stuff's falling off the walls. And, you know, Nancy and I would be in bed thinking, okay, is this the big one? Do we get up? Do we get the kids? And we're waiting to see how big is this thing going to get. Some of them got pretty, you know, unsettlingly large, but not the big one. And they're saying that the 6.4 earthquake in the Northern California coast area, it did damage. There are people without electricity. Some people are, you know, cut off from communications. No injuries or deaths reported as of yet. Hopefully there will be none. But it was a bigger earthquake, and it really rattled a lot of people. So here's a shout out from all of us at Relevant Radio, just to let you know that we're thinking about you, and we're going to hope and pray that everything in the aftermath of this earthquake is calm and, what's the word I'm looking for? Injury-free. That'd be a good way to do it. Let's see. Cyrus, I have another thing for your Good to Know file, and I do believe you may have some audio on this, but I know it's an unpleasant topic, but everybody should know about this, and that is when you flush the toilet, there's a whole bunch of spume, spray, mist.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yeah,
yay. Patrick Madrid Show.
You heard it here? It comes up, and it's, well, we'll let the scientists explain it. I think we've got a little bit of explanation from us. I think this is from CNN, but the simple fix for this, everybody, is just put the lid down before you press the flush button because, well, listen to what they have to say.
It's simultaneously beautiful and terrifying. The very first time we did this in the lab, everyone just went silent, and then sort of there was some nervous laughter, and, you know, because we were all like, you've got to be kidding me, like, that's what happens? There's just this incredibly energetic jet of aerosol particles that shoots out of the toilet at speeds of 1 to 2 meters per second. So if there are pathogens present in those particles, then it's an exposure risk for people who are using the toilet. I hope the scientific community can use this information to make changes to the ventilation or disinfection that reduce the exposure risk. Generally, aerosols are known to transmit both respiratory diseases and intestinal diseases. So all of those pathogens, COVID and norovirus and many other pathogens, people know that those can be present in human waste. What is less understood is what is the actual transmission risk of getting a disease from the exposure to those particles. There are quite a few studies that address the issue of COVID, and they are inconclusive. I'm not a public health official, but I think minimizing the amount of time you spend in a closed space where there's toilets flushing, trying to mask up while you're in there, I think those two approaches are the most effective strategies at this point. I've seen tweets from all over the world with people saying things like, I'm making my children watch this video so that they will know to close the lid on their toilet. And there's probably a lot of value in doing that.
So, Patrick, stop hanging out in bathrooms and you'll minimize your risk.
No, I think the simple thing is, not that I do that anyway, but the simple thing is just close the lid before you flush. Problem solved. You know, because it can't get past that. I thought the whimsical music in the background is what made it all the more funny.
It's a very nice touch.
Serious business. But still kind of funny the way they juxtapose. But so anyway, this has universal application. Everybody can learn from this. And yeah, so there's that. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Also, Live Action has got a really effective parody of how employers will treat women who get pregnant. Their employees who get pregnant. And rather than try to explain it, I'll share it with you. So this is courtesy of Lila Rose in Live Action, and support the good work that they do. But take a listen to this. This is kind of a fictitious office discussion taking place. Picture yourself in like the vice president's corner office, and he and the HR guy have called one of the female employees in for a little talk. Here's what happens.
Megan. Have a seat.
Well, Megan, we heard from HR that you recently discovered you're pregnant.
Is this true, Megan?
Yes, I am.
Megan, you are a valued member of this company.
Very valued.
And we have a generous package to help you out for the days ahead.
Very generous.
Paid time off, appointment expenses covered, meals covered, flights in and out of state.
That is awesome. Flights out of state? I don't think I'll be...
Yeah, we want to make sure that our workers are taken care of. So just tell us how much time you need to take off, and then when you return, we can get back to it.
I mean, do you think we can expect to get rolling in 3 weeks?
3 weeks? The baby isn't due for another 7 months, and then... and also, how much time did you say I can take off after delivery as well?
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's a wrench in things.
Yeah, that's a curveball. It's really going to throw off our schedule.
I'm sorry. The baby's got to come out at some point, and then...
Yeah, we were hoping that would be the next couple of weeks. You know, you can fly to another state.
And stay in a really nice hotel.
Yeah, and go to some nice restaurants on the company.
Are you telling me to get an abortion?
No.
No! Dropping the A word on us here.
I mean, this is all about what you want, Megan. This is your body, your choice.
Your body, your choice.
Entirely up to you.
This baby...
You know what? Trish, can you come on in here? Thanks for coming in, Trish.
Absolutely, sir.
If you can just stand right over here and let Megan take a good look at you.
Now, Megan,
would you rather be some trophy housewife?
Or would you rather be Trish?
You don't want to be a trophy.
Tell her about your career journey, Trish.
Entered as an unpaid intern straight out of grad school, part-time after a year, full-time after another 2 years, 6 years of 80 hours a week before promotion to management. Now I'm down to a smooth 60. 2 years later, awarded Employee of the Year. Happiest day of my life.
Which do you think she'd rather be holding in her arms? That award or a baby, Megan?
Not even a question, right?
why do I have to pick one?
Could never be who I am today with a kid to take care of. Wait, are you telling me you got pregnant on purpose? Who does that?
That's what I'm saying. Having kids, what are you, a boomer?
Megan, I wouldn't hesitate to say that Trish is nearly as important to this company as any man.
Thank you for saying that, sir. You don't want a kid, Megan. Get a puppy instead. That's what I did.
Oh, actually, Trish, with your work from home, we were thinking that there would be a productivity increase if you didn't have that puppy.
I can't believe you would insinuate that I should get rid of my puppy. That is offensive, Larry.
All right, Larry, don't be offensive. Here, Megan, take this plant. You can have it. Invest your maternal instincts into this.
Ooh, yeah, this won't keep you up at night.
Megan, this is a woman's right. Having an abortion is something only women can do.
Having a child is something only women can do.
Do you want a kid or do you want to be successful? You gotta choose.
I disagree.
Well then, I guess we're gonna have to revisit that discussion about your metrics and whether or not you're going to hit those metrics.
The metrics.
Are you saying that you would actually...
This is your body. Your choice, Megan.
Unbelievable.
But we support you in meeting these metrics.
We support women.
This is all about women's empowerment.
I am a feminist.
Work for any major company, and you'll see that our offer is very competitive. Disney, Starbucks, Tesla, Procter & Gamble.
Okay, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to go back to my desk where I'm going to continue to do the excellent work that I've been doing for this company while my baby grows inside my belly, and then I will give birth to that baby in 7 months. And then I'll take the 12 weeks of paid maternity leave. My baby will be on my insurance, and once in a while I might need a little bit of flexibility, but I will continue to knock it out of the park like I always have.
Classic submissive conservative woman.
Obviously listening to a bunch of men telling her what to do with her body.
It's like she wants us all to live in The Handmaid's Tale, you know?
That's good stuff right there. And that's that sounds very true to form. It has that corporate feel about it, the corporate speak. So maybe if you know of a young woman who may be pondering the, you know, the false choice between only two things, either staying home and having children or being successful in her studies, or if she is working, not everybody needs to work, but some people do. You can play this for them. Cyrus, you're going to get that posted right quick, aren't you?
Already posted, sir.
Well done. Well done, sir. What other night? Oh, this is going to affect a lot of people. This doesn't involve toilets, though, FYI.
Thank you.
Whew. This involves Ring doorbell cameras. I have a number of such devices in my home.
I like, you seem to particularly like it when mine goes off during the show.
Well, I know what it is. When I hear, let's hear it. Do you have that sound? The Ring doorbell sound? That's one of them. That's when they press the doorbell. What about when somebody walks by and activates the camera? Do you have that sound?
Oh, is that a different sound?
Yeah, it sounds like a tinkling, kind of tinkling crystals. That's another sound.
Oh, I'll have to look for that.
Yeah, so play the Ring doorbell sound again. Play it again.
Okay.
There you go. Don't be shy, Cyrus. Don't be shy. It is Taco Tuesday, after all. Here's why I'm talking about Ring doorbells. FoxLA.com, two people were indicted for hacking into Ring doorbell cameras, calling in fake emergencies, and then streaming the police response from the cameras on social media. Here's what happened. Two men were indicted in a nationwide swatting spree in which criminals called in fake police complaints. They took over the Ring doorbell cameras at homes. They live streamed the responses and in some cases even mocked law enforcement through the cameras. This is so absurd. Couldn't they just play Call of Duty or something like that?
I didn't realize these things were so easy to hack into.
If it's connected to the internet, it's hackable. That's why you have to put robust passwords and stuff. And even then, I don't know if it's not... maybe still hackable. Kaya Christian Nelson of Wisconsin and James Thomas Andrew McCarty of North Carolina were indicted by an LA grand jury Friday last week for a string of swatting calls in which people call in fake emergencies between. This took place in November 2020. According to the indictment, these two guys were able to access people's Ring doorbell accounts through compromised Yahoo email accounts. They cross-reference. They have the word allegedly in here like every other sentence. So I'm just going to dispense with that. But just note that they say they allegedly did this. They allegedly did that. Cross-reference the Yahoo accounts with Ring accounts that had the same email address and passwords. Once they had access to the cameras, the two would call in false emergency reports in areas near where those cameras were active, and they streamed the audio and video of the police response on social media. One such false report was called into the West Covina Police Department. According to the indictment, Nelson and one other person posed as a minor, claiming that her parents were drinking and shooting guns inside the home. Officials said that Nelson used the camera to verbally threaten and taunt West Covina police officers who responded to the reported incident, and other incidents taking place in Michigan and California, Montana, Georgia, you name it. They were doing it all over the place. Now, moral to this story is take steps. If you have a Ring doorbell camera, and most people nowadays have some kind of gadget like that. You have one, Cyrus. I have a couple. Most everybody listening has these kinds of things now because they are convenient, but they're also, you know, the convenience brings with it some potential downside like this. So thankfully nobody got hurt or anything like that. But even just for your own privacy, whatever you need to do to lock that down and make it harder for people. Oh, by the way, don't use 123456 as a password. I think we've covered that story before. There's so many easy passwords that many people do, like maybe your birthday or things like that. And these guys have easy ways to crack that in the blink of an eye. So maybe we'll have to dust off some of those tips another time and share that for people who want to know how do we do this. But just go online and you'll be able to find out how to make your Ring doorbell or whatever other device you have in your home more secure so that dopey people like these two guys can't invade your privacy. Quick timeout. We'll take a break and we'll come back to more information on this Taco Tuesday and your phone calls. The number is 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Give a call. I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find out more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Real life solutions you can believe in. The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
It's not Christmas yet, but it will be soon. Are you getting ready? And spiritually ready at that. Get to confession, you know, start preparing for the birth of baby Jesus. Get your heart ready. I got a note here from Adelso listening in, I don't know where Adelso is. He didn't tell me. He just said he's listening on the Relevant Radio app. And he said, "Hi, Patrick, I went to confession last Saturday. It was the best confession during my 35 years. I guess that's how old he is. I told a priest, please listen to me. I came to confession a few months ago, but I felt like it was incomplete because the priest in that earlier confession said, please hurry up. There are people waiting outside. I wrote down," I think he's referring to the sins he wanted to confess on his phone. He said, "So long story short, I didn't want to go to confession because something was holding me back. But when I finished with this confession, I felt something releasing out of me that the priest said, how do you feel now? And I said, this has been the best confession and the best confession of my knowledge in my whole life. He said, honestly, I feel better." Bingo bango, Adelso, that is great. And that's, you know, the feeling of feeling better is not the goal. The goal, of course, is to get right with God and to be honest with him and with yourself about your sins when you go to the sacrament. But that's a very common side effect. In fact, I would say it's probably almost always the case that you have that feeling of relief when you go to confession. especially if you know, as you do, that you were, you know, not complete. And maybe when you went to confession and you had, I don't know, I'm throwing a dart here. Let's say you had three or four mortal sins on your soul and you got to one of them or maybe two of them. And in the case of the priest, you know, hastening you, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. By the way, that's not a good thing to do. Sometimes it's necessary to give somebody a little bit of, you know, a nudge, like, you know, are there people outside? Yeah, well, we better, you know, move this along. But people need to say everything. And if they feel rushed, then maybe they won't. So in any case, Adelso, if you go to confession and you hold something back, and let's just say intentionally, if you intentionally, just out of embarrassment, or I don't want the priest to yell at me. He's not going to yell at you, by the way. I don't want the priest to be shocked. He's not going to be shocked. There's nothing you can confess that he hasn't heard. And chances are the person that just left the confessional confessed some embarrassing thing, and the person behind you who's going to go in after you're done is going to confess something embarrassing. That's typically the way it goes, at least according to my anecdotal conversations with priests about such things. So you don't have to worry that you're going to shock the priest or make him angry or any of those things. Just push past the embarrassment. Bring everything up. You know, it can be clinical. You don't have to be wallowing in any details. Just number in kind, as you've heard me say before. What kind of sin was it and how many times? And then once you're done, as you say, you're going to have that great feeling of knowing that you have been forgiven. God does love you and he wants you to be happy. And thankfully, Jesus gave us the sacrament of reconciliation so that we can avail ourselves of his mercy and forgiveness when we fall into sin. So I'm so happy for you. This note comes in from, who's this from? This is from Francisca, and she's listening in Arkansas. Shout out, Francisca. She says, "Hi, Patrick. I listen to your radio show often. Thank you. All I ask is 3 hours a day, Francisca. Just to clarify, that's all I'm asking of you is 3 hours out of your day. That's not too much to ask, I don't think. So if you can bump up to that level, that would be great." She says, "Listening to your show deepens my faith to learn more about the teachings of the Catholic Church. I have a question about Jews and Judaism." She says, "Are the Jews, Judaism, and Orthodox beliefs different from each other? I just learned that Judaism does not accept Jesus as the Son of God, nor do Jews believe that Jesus is the Messiah or the Savior, nor do they believe in the New Testament. Can you help me to more understand this non-Christian religion? Thank you." Well, I would recommend, number one, a book by Dr. Peter Kreeft. It's spelled K-R-E-E-F-T. That's not the book title. That's his last name. K-R-E-E-F-T. It looks like Kreeft. He pronounces it Kreeft. And it is a book called Fundamentals of the Faith. I read it when it was probably fairly newly out, published by Ignatius Press. So I'm thinking this must have been like early 1990s, maybe late 80s, early 90s. And this book, if I can summarize it for you, is a survey of world religions, including Judaism. So he gives you a survey of, well, what do Jews believe? And keep in mind that Judaism, well, a couple things. Judaism, as it's practiced today as a religion, is not the same kind of Judaism as it was practiced in the time of Jesus and Mary. In those days, and for centuries before that, Judaism was a religion of the temple. Now, they did have synagogues, and they had them for people who, you know, obviously couldn't get to the temple because they lived in far-flung places. So they did have synagogues as they do today. But the focus of the religion was the temple worship and the animal sacrifice. That was something that was enjoined upon the Israelites. And in fact, it was a kind of punishment because the Israelites kept going after pagan ways and falling into worshiping pagan gods and things like that. So partly as a punishment, the Lord enjoined this economy of animal sacrifice. So that's what was going on in the temple day after day after day. It talks about that in the Epistle to the Hebrews, if you want to read that. Begin reading in chapter 4 and read through say, chapter 9 or 10, and it'll give you kind of a look back on how the priests would go to the altar every day and they would offer these animal sacrifices, and they never really accomplished anything because those sacrifices were merely symbolic. And they pointed to Jesus, but that was the essence of Judaism in terms of its worship in those days. Now, a generation or so after the time of Jesus, so now we're in the year 70 AD, the Romans, who had been occupying the land of Israel for a long time before that, they had had it up to here with the unruliness of their Jewish subjects, and these fierce oppressors came in and they completely ransacked the temple. They profaned the temple, they killed, and I'm not even sure, maybe Cale Clark would know this off the top of his head, but I mean, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of Jews were slaughtered by the Romans. They completely destroyed Jerusalem. Jesus had talked about this. He said, you know, these stones, there will not be left one standing upon another in due time, and this generation will live to see the profanation of the temple and the abomination of desolation standing in the temple. So in any case, that's what happened. So when that happened, the temple worship of Judaism ceased. There were no more accoutrements for animal sacrifice and the vestments that had all been destroyed. The temple had been destroyed. The priesthood was, in essence, much more than decimated. I mean, hundreds of thousands of people wiped out. So they no longer had the ability to practice their faith this way. So it ceased. So then it became a religion that was focused on study of the Torah, the law. And so the synagogues and the rabbinical schools and the Talmudic tractates, the Talmud is a very long series of rabbinic commentaries that go back into the early centuries. And so it's kind of an accumulation of rabbinic commentary on the law and the prophets, etc. So that's what Judaism became, and that's what it is now. Now, within Judaism, there's a variety of approach to this issue and to issues like, you know, what is permitted, what is not permitted, what duties do I have, what duties do I don't think I have to worry about. So at one end, you might say at the end of the spectrum, that is the least observant, would be secular Jews. Secular Jews would identify as Jewish, many of them, but it's not for them a religion. It's a culture, it's an ethnicity in some cases. And they identify as Jewish, but they don't really practice their faith. And that may sound familiar because we have Catholics who are like that as well, sadly. And as you move more in the other direction, away from secular Judaism, it becomes more formal, and you'll see more observance of Jewish traditions. So you would have Reform Judaism, which would be a very liberal kind of Judaism. And as you move closer, then you get to conservative Judaism, then you get to Orthodox Judaism. And on the far end of Orthodox Judaism, which is very observant and much more traditional, then you have groups within that sort of conservative wing who are extremely punctiliously observant, and they go by various names. You have the Haredi, I'm told that they don't like to be called ultra-Orthodox, but that's how sometimes you'll hear them mention the Chabad movement within the very ultra-Orthodox. I'm trying to avoid that term, but those who are very Orthodox, the Hasidim, those that you might see on a Sabbath day, or maybe Sunday would be more like it, in their unusual-looking regalia, the headdress that the men wear, and the peos, the long curls on the sides of their heads, for the men anyway, they grow them long. And these are all outward manifestations of their devotion to that very traditional Orthodox understanding of Judaism. Now, the reason I mention this is simply because it's kind of like saying, well, what do Protestants believe? Well, there's no way to answer that question because Protestantism is not a monolith. It's comprised of many, many variations on a theme. Protestants tend to have certain things in common, but not always. like most of them would say they go by the Bible alone. They don't agree with each other on what the Bible means. But that's a different issue. So it's kind of like that, that within Judaism, there's a spectrum. So back to this book, it's going to help you. So what Peter Kreef does is he gives you a survey of not only Judaism, there's a whole chapter on that, but also Islam and Hinduism, Buddhism, and some of the subsets of those Eastern religions. But the point of the whole book is that it is, you might say, a kind of a compare and contrast with Christianity. The backdrop to the whole discussion is, here are some things we have in common, but this is what makes Christianity unique. So to get to your questions about how they don't believe the Jews, they don't believe that Jesus is the Son of God. That's true. They don't. They don't believe that Jesus is the Messiah or Savior. That's true. They don't. This is what is important for us as Christians to recognize, is that God has kept his covenant with his chosen people. He hasn't forgotten them. He hasn't abrogated or changed his mind when it comes to his covenant. In fact, he has fulfilled it in their midst, and that is in and through Jesus Christ, the Messiah. So we have a special message for them that, granted, can be difficult for people, especially for them, because they have been ingrained in their minds that Christianity is antithetical to what they believe. And it's difficult, to put it lightly, for people who are Jews to hear the message of Jesus, but it's not impossible. And there are some who have done a great job of showing how to do that. I'm thinking of Marty Barrick, for example. He's a convert from, Orthodox Judaism. He's now a Catholic. He's been Catholic for many years. And he wrote a book as a way to try to explain to his relatives and friends who were aghast that he would leave Judaism and become a Catholic. I mean, they just couldn't imagine it. So he wrote a book called Second Exodus. And in that book, he explains his reasons why he embraced faith in Jesus. So that's one. There's also another author. His name is Ray Sherman, S-C-H-O-E-M-A-N. And he wrote two books. He himself is a convert from Orthodox Judaism. He wrote one book called Salvation is from the Jews. And another one is called Honey from the Rock. And Honey from the Rock is kind of like a surprise by truth book. It has chapters written by different Jews who converted to the Catholic faith. And it's a fascinating read, and it will give you a lot more information about not just what Jews believe variously, but also what are some of the obstacles that prevent them, or, you know, they shouldn't prevent them, but what often does prevent them from embracing faith in Jesus, and how you, if you wanted to, could have a dialogue with a Jew on this issue. So those are some book suggestions, three of them to get you going. Again, Honey from the Rock. And that's by Roy Sherman. And I want to double check the spelling of his last name. Yeah, that is correct. S-C-H-O-E-M-A-N. And then the other one is Salvation is from the Jews. So check that out. Hope that's helpful. 888-914-9149. This would be a good time to take a quick timeout, and we'll come right back. The phones are open, so give us a call. 888-914-9149. And when we return, I want to share with you something I think is beautifully astonishing that took place on the secular news in very, very secular Australia just recently. Not the kind of thing you would expect to see on a secular news station. I'll share with you what that was right after this. Today, we'd like to thank Gregory, who's listening in California, for donating his Eldorado. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles by visiting relevantradio.com/car today.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
I like it. You're combining Taco Tuesday and Christmas. Now that's what I call a taco. Taco Town! We do it in Mexico all the time. Give me one of those tacos. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Neil now in St. Petersburg, Florida. Good morning, Neil. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have two questions about a funeral mass.
Okay.
Number one, is it possible that the person's cremated remains can be at his or her own funeral mass as opposed to a physical body? And my second question is, before one dies, can one request personal readings, gospel, and music at his or her own funeral mass?
Yes to both questions. So the church strongly encourages the presence of the remains of the deceased to be at the mass of Christian burial. So whether that is a body in a coffin or ashes in an urn, either way, yes. And yes, so if the person before dying has an opportunity to select music or whatever, you know, things that can be chosen, that can be done. Now, there is a mass of Christian burial that follows a certain order, but as I understand it, you'd have to check with the priest to double check me, but I think that you have the option of selecting readings if you wish to do so. And in lieu of that, there are appropriate readings that are usually read at a funeral mass. But I think that the person does have that option of selecting, I would like these readings or this music at that mass.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. And FYI, just as a resource, the Catholic Bishops Conference website, it's usccb.org. If you go there and type in the search bar, Mass of Christian Burial or cremation or some other keywords that would associate with this question, it'll pull up all the different resources in terms of guidelines and requirements and things. It's easy to navigate there, and I think you'll find that very helpful as well.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Nice chatting with you. Let's go now to Barbara in Passaic, New Jersey. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Patrick. Back in about 1984 or 85, I was granted a church annulment by then Archbishop Theodore McCarrick of the Newark Archdiocese, and he was eventually elevated all the way up to cardinal, and then recently Pope Francis excommunicated him and laicized him for sexual crimes with adults and children. So is my church annulment still valid?
Yes, and there's no need to worry about that for the following reason, Barbara. A few things. Number one, an annulment is not a sacrament, so there's no question of validity the way there would be in the case of, like, you know, is this a valid baptism or is this a valid Holy Eucharist? And I don't know what happened. She just dropped. Her phone dropped. Well, I wonder if we're having phone problems today, Cyrus. I kind of think maybe we are. So to the lady who I was just talking to, if your phone signal dropped, feel free to call back, and we'll put you at the top of the list, 888-914-9149. So let me pick up where I left off. An annulment or a declaration of nullity, as it's more technically known, is not like a sacrament. It's not valid or invalid unto itself. You can have an invalid baptism if, let's say, the person doing the baptizing doesn't say the right form, which is, I baptize you in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, or if the person doesn't use the proper matter. So let's say using Hawaiian fruit punch instead of water, that would be invalid, or not having the intention to baptize. So let's say you're in a movie and you're playing the priest and you're baptizing a baby, but you're not intending to baptize the baby. This is all an act. This is just for the purposes of the movie. Well, that wouldn't be a valid baptism. So an annulment is not like that. An annulment, and again, it's really better to call it by the technical name, which is a declaration of nullity, is the church's rendering of a decision after due diligence and looking into all the facts that pertain to this marriage to determine whether or not there was some impediment, could have been more than one, present at the time the couple got married that would have prevented the marriage from being valid. So a declaration of nullity is where the church, after doing this due diligence, returns a verdict and says, we declare that this marriage was null. So this is an important little nuance here, and that is that the church can't, strictly speaking, nullify, the church can't nullify a valid marriage. Jesus himself said in Matthew chapter 19, what God has joined together, let no man put asunder. So the church doesn't have the power or the authority to dissolve or nullify a valid marriage. The whole point of the annulment process is to determine whether or not there was a valid marriage in the first place, or was it null? So the work of the tribunal, and however long that takes, it varies, you know, it could be 6 months, a year, 2 years, what have you. When that is returned and the declaration of nullity is given, the, as I understand it, I've never been through this process personally, never planned to go through this process, but for reading the literature and such and knowing people who have, you get a confirmation letter that tells you that you have received a declaration of nullity, if in fact that's what the, you know, the tribunal determines. Now, Cardinal McCarrick would simply be he would have been at that time the bishop at that time under whose jurisdiction all of this takes place. So it's a perfunctory role insofar as he himself didn't even see your paperwork. He himself had nothing to do with the process because bishops are busy with many other things, but they oversee the tribunal process within their diocese. And they have very competent people who are experts in this field, and they know canon law and all of that. So you don't have to worry, is my point, that somehow because of his malfeasance and his sins and whatever, who knows whatever else is going on in that story, none of that affects you at all. I suppose I could explain it further, but I don't think I need to. So I hope that that puts your mind at ease. You don't have anything to worry about. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Chris now in Feasterville, PA, where everybody is well fed. Good morning, Chris.
That is true. Especially at Thanksgiving, Patrick. I just have two questions, Patrick, about eligibility of Catholic women to receive communion. Now, the first, suppose you have a Catholic woman who believes that it is okay for a woman who was raped, for example, you know, traumatic attack, a human life is engendered, who feels that it's okay to go ahead and have that baby aborted. Or another case where a woman feels that it's okay to abort a baby within the first trimester. My question is, in those two categories, is there any right for the Catholic woman to receive communion in either of those two categories?
This is a tricky question, so let me try to answer it as clearly as I can on the fly here. So holding an opinion on this issue, even though I'm trying to think now, this could fall into the category of formally dissenting from a de fide doctrine. De fide is a technical term the church uses, it's a Latin term, and it refers to the articles of the faith that are proposed to us by the church as doctrine we are obliged to believe. We're not permitted to dissent from that. And if we did, then that would lead to the sin of heresy. Now, it could be formal heresy, and there are very various permutations. But in this case, I think that there would be some gray area on this topic, but not much. So if I were to answer this in a stringent way, I would say that by holding this opinion, it is a form of dissenting from the church's teaching on the sanctity of life. And even though she herself didn't commit the sin of abortion, that's what I'm assuming is in your scenario, Chris, that she herself, yes, is just holding an opinion rather than having done this. Would that be the case?
Yes.
Okay. So the holding of the opinion, but never acting on it, never encouraging someone else to have an abortion, never driving some woman to an abortion clinic or doing something that would overtly show dissent from this teaching, that's where the gray area is. So to be on the stringent side, one could say, well, the holding of this opinion is an obstinate refusal to accept what the church teaches, which would be under this light would be a serious sin. Therefore, no, you couldn't go to communion until you confess this sin of obstinately rejecting a teaching of the church. Perhaps those who would go in a more lenient direction might say, well, she hasn't actually done anything. She's not doing the act itself of abortion. She's not aiding and abetting anyone else who's doing it. She's not a nurse at an abortion clinic. She just simply holds this view, which happens to be at variance with Catholic teaching. And that's where this gray area, it seems to me, would be. I think I personally would fall on the more stringent side. And if I were a priest hearing confession, I can imagine myself saying, you know, I really do believe that you need to embrace the church's teaching. And here's the teaching, and here's why the church teaches this, and the fifth commandment, thou shalt not kill, and all the things that go into it, and try to work with her so that she could see that the view she holds is contrary to that of the church, and try to approach it that way. But yeah, so those are my thoughts on the topic off the cuff, Chris. Was there a second part of the question?
Just real quick, Patrick. This woman has flatly stated that if she had a daughter that was raped, she would definitely, without a doubt, have the daughter get an abortion. And that's where I'm sort of a question mark as to, in your opinion, maybe you answered it. Astringently, you would technically say no. Am I correct?
I think I would, because, I mean, it is the teaching of the church that abortion is a serious sin. And how do we know that? Well, one of the ways we know that is because there is an excommunication that's attached to that. It automatically incurs excommunication if you mm-hmm. either procure an abortion or help somebody to procure an abortion or perform an abortion. If you're Catholic, you're automatically excommunicated. So it's a grave sin, and it carries this penalty of excommunication with it, which priests can lift.
Okay.
So by the way, just as a little side note for those who may not be aware of it, for a woman who has an abortion, when she repents and she goes to confession, not only would she receive absolution, but the priest would also lift the excommunication. And that's mm-hmm. almost always a faculty granted by the bishop to the priest to be able to do that. It would have to be granted by the bishop to do that, but often All right. it is. So for her to say, you know, and this would be true for men for that matter, if my daughter got pregnant, I would make sure she had an abortion. That's an obstinate, pig-headed, beady-eyed refusal to accept what the church teaches on this issue of life. So I don't think you're in this position and you're properly disposed to go to Holy Communion.
She said, her answer to that is, oh, the Catholic Church is run by men, and actually that has nothing to do with it. The sanctity of life, nothing at all.
Well, the Supreme Court that decided Roe versus Wade was a bunch of men, too. There were no women on that court. And she obviously likes what those men had to say. So it's really not the issue of men per se when you get down to it, though.
Very quickly, Patrick, she also says she doesn't believe in confession. Wouldn't that sound pretty strange for a Catholic woman not to believe in one of the sacraments? I just thought I'd better ask you quickly.
Well, poor thing. I mean, I'm not here to run anyone down or to be, right. you know, but to be Catholic means that you accept the gospel. You accept the teachings of Jesus. And Jesus said about his apostles, the first bishops of the church, he who listens to you listens to me. He who rejects you rejects me. So people who reject the authority of the church, and I'm talking about the lawful authority properly exercised by bishops. I'm not talking about renegade bishops or wacko cardinals or anything like that. We're talking about, you know, this is what the church teaches, and the bishops have the duty to teach, etc. So if a Catholic says, no, I'm not going to do that. No, I'm not going to believe that. That is the sin of heresy. Mm-hmm. And if you hold that in your heart, it's I think it would be judged as material heresy. But if you export that publicly and proclaim it and push for it, that's a formal heresy. And that's a really serious sin, because it separates
you from... When you approach the altar rail, Patrick, isn't it also true that in communion, when you receive communion, you're agreeing to accept all that the Catholic Church teaches?
Well, yes, you could put it that way. When you say, amen, I believe, may it be so, it's like being in a courtroom and swearing to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, which would include that I am in communion with the church and with the Lord. And hopefully people are in that state. Otherwise, it's a form of perjury.